This is The Think Tank, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. With Dr. Mike O'Neill and hosted by Mike Russell. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, two fascinating guests. Former Attorney General Grant Woods, columnist Rob. Both of you guys are on the R side of the table. Grant, you've been an elected Republican official. Bob, you were a Republican consultant before seeking honest work in the Fourth Estate.
Some would dispute that characterization, but on both sides of it.
On both sides of it. I've been dying. This has really been sort of the question of the last couple of years. What on earth is happening with the Republican Party?
Well, I think you need to step back and get some perspective, because the question is triggered by the success of Donald Trump and what he's doing.
In part.
And certainly the presidency is the largest prize in politics. And Republicans have lost five of the last six elections in terms of the popular vote. So you can fairly conclude that the Republican Party has a problem in presidential politics. But if you look elsewhere, the Republican Party controls both houses of Congress. The party controlled neither house of Congress from the mid-1950s until 1994. It controls more governorships and state houses of state legislatures than any time before in American history. So until Trump, I don't think you could look at the party and say that it was a failed party or that it was falling apart. Now, certainly, Trump has identified and irritated fractures that exist in any broad-based party. About a third of the Republican electorate has always been what I think can fairly be described as isolationist. That's the percentage of the vote that Pat Buchanan got in the 1996 Republican presidential primary. But Trump has made it the plurality party, or the plurality faction within the Republican Party in this race.
Do you think that's really part of his appeal?
I think issues are a part of his appeal.
Not issues, isolationism.
But it's, well, no question. I mean, if you look at his key issues, it's trade barriers, it's restrictions on immigration, and it's retreating from American commitments around the world. That is, I mean, the word isolationism is improperly used, in my judgment, mostly to just describe foreign policy. But when you hit all three of the key components of it, I think it is the appropriate word. And there has been that faction within the Republican Party. They tend to be social conservatives as well. And so they have accepted a backseat role on those issues in the Republican Party because of the prominence of social issues and how important social issues are to them. But that's sort of fraying apart. And also his particular approach, the vulgarity with which he campaigns, I think has created sort of a cultural clash in the party as well. People who think that's great, the graduates of conservative talk radio, and those who are appalled by it and say this simply isn't the kind of behavior we want in the person who is supposed to represent us in the presidency, and if he were to win, to represent the country to itself and to the world.
You know, I wasn't by any means in my question suggesting that the Republican Party is falling apart, but I was suggesting implicit in it that it is in many senses, unrecognizable. George H.W. Bush has said as much. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Well, I don't disagree with anything Bob has said in his analysis. I think both parties are pretty much fundamentally flawed across the board. So pretty much whatever you want to talk about relating to a political party, I think the Democratic Party today, the Republican Party in particular, has so many flaws that it when that can be covered up for some period of time or by a particular success or candidates, but there comes a point when it's all exposed. I don't recognize the Republican Party today. I would, if this was the Republican Party, what's been shown in these presidential debates from when we had 17 down to now when we have 3, if that's the Republican Party, I never would have joined it in the first place back when I made that decision when, you know, I turned 18. I've had a lot of problems with being a Republican for a long time, and I'm not going to be a Republican for that much longer if this is what it's all about, if it's about negativity, if it's about hate, if it's about division, if it's about abandoning a commitment to freedom across the world, if it's all negative. I had enough problems with them when they were positive. I believe that the so-called conservatives in the Republican Party are fundamentally phony on many of their issues. Mm-hmm. They want less government. Arizona is a great example. They want less government as long as that suits their interest. When it doesn't, they're more than happy to use the power of government to shove that in people's faces or down their throats.
So you're talking more. You're talking overall. You're not just talking the ones that were standing in front of a podium during the debates.
I'm talking overall.
You're talking about overall party.
To someone like me, since you're asking me, I can speak for myself, and I've had a big problem with them for a long time because I think they're wrong on so many issues, and I don't think that's being conservative to use the power of government, for example, on issues of choice, on issues of sexual orientation, on most of the social issues which they claim to be so important to them. I disagree with them on that, but, you know, I've had to go along with that, and I've happily gone along with it because other issues have and candidates have been more important to me. Having said that, if they're going to now field ridiculous candidates and going to abandon the parts of their platform that I used to, you know, that I do support.
Those being primarily?
Economic, mm-hmm. America's role in the world. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, I think we have a role in the world. Bob's right about these isolationist tendencies. I understand those isolationist tendencies. I didn't vote for George W. Bush's reelection because of I couldn't think of anything I agreed with him on.
That was the neocon. That was the exact opposite.
I'm not a neocon. I've supported many neocons and continue to, but that's not where I'm at. So I understand that this America First mentality, except it can't be ignorant. To me, we have a big role in foreign policy around the world. But what it's not is to forget the lessons of our generation in Vietnam and everything we've been involved with since. And that is, don't just blunder in and think by force you can change the world.
More dissecting of the Republican Party with former Attorney General Grant Woods and columnist Bob Robb when we return in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we're back with Grant Woods and columnist Robert Robb and talking about the sort of the dissection of the current Republican Party. There used to be a part, and I think, Grant, I think it may have described you to a certain extent. I thought of a couple of generations, the Republican Party was this sort of Midwestern businessman who thought that, we do have some social responsibility to one another, but I want my government run efficiently.
Right.
And I'm not anti-government.
Right.
But I want it to function well.
And we're for local control. That means the state should do it rather than the feds, if that's possible. The cities should do it rather than the state, if
that's
possible.
That has an interesting turn right now. Our own legislature seems to be trying to curtail.
Of course they are. They've done it from day one. That's what I'm saying. They're phonies. Mm-hmm. The state does it to the county, and the county does it to the city, and the state. They do it to whomever they can do it to. And I always thought, when I was Attorney General, people don't know half of the things that went on. Let me just put it that way. Sometimes if people just knew, you should be judged a little bit as an office holder by the times you could have used your power to do certain things and you did not. because it wasn't right. It wasn't the right thing to do. No one would have known. They really wouldn't have figured it out, but you don't do it. Attorney General is a very powerful post. There's a lot of things you
discretion,
can do.
Discretion, a lot of discretion.
A lot of discretion. And so, you know, because the state doesn't like what Tempe does on plastic bags, you know, they're going to jump in and usurp that. These are not people who believe in local control, in my view. They believe in power. And that's too bad, because that doesn't make them any different than anybody else, as far as I'm concerned. But I don't view that as a new phenomenon. I thought the legislature was horrible when I was attorney general in the 90s, and I think they're more horrible now.
You know, I think one...
Not to put too, you know, fine a point on it.
You know, there's one thing...
That was almost a mic drop moment right there. And I'm out.
There's one thing about the legislature, the structure that it seems to me that promotes a sort of an extremist view, and that is this majority of the majority business.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have Republicans get about, you know, roundabout get 50, 55% of the vote
right.
in this state. They get about 65% of the elected legislators because of the way district works. But then you get that 65%, and if you get a majority of that, you get 35% to 30. The 35%, the majority of the majority, calls all the shots.
Right.
And they're not a majority, they're a minority. But they're a majority of the Republican Party.
This is right in Bob's bailiwick, this sort of theoretical analysis. You know, we went to school together, and it's a good political science question. Mm-hmm. I think it's handcuffed the Senate for many U.S. Senate mm-hmm. in many years. I don't believe in any of that. Mm-hmm. I think if you get 51 votes out of 100, it should go forward. You shouldn't have a 60 there, or in the legislature, you shouldn't put these artificial barriers. I don't buy it. But of course, that's how the majority party maintains a tight grip on things.
And, well, not only do you need the 51, but also the demands of loyalty that you vote the party
sure,
line.
Sure,
I mean, we've seen that in a couple of senators who already had said they want to hear the Garland nomination.
Yes.
They want to hold hearings. And they pulled back from it.
Right.
And for those that have skipped civics and don't really understand how that works, I think we're seeing it right now in this election on both sides of the ball. We're seeing the DNC and the RNC stating very clearly, this is our game.
Right.
This isn't your game. You're just pieces to our game. And we can do really whatever we want. We have that power and we'll retain that.
The retreat by the senators calling for hearings, I don't think, was as a result of internal pressure in Washington.
Really?
It was from pressure from Republican primary voters.
Mm-hmm.
So, and those rules tend to hold up until they don't. When it came time to expand Medicaid, the majority of the majority rule was thrown out the window, and a coalition of a small number of Republicans and mostly Democrats seized control of the process and got it done.
But that, I mean, isn't that a rare exception? That's a good example, but isn't that really the rare exception?
Prior to the 2000s, it was not uncommon for Republican leaders in the legislature to have a open dialogue with Democratic leaders in the legislature to try to develop a pocket of Democratic votes that they could use and reduce the leverage of some of the people who, some of their recalcitrants in their own caucus.
And vice versa, though.
There's been a...
It worked that way for that. Just my 8 years dealing with the legislature as attorney general, I found myself on the opposite side of the Republican majority there on most issues, because they were running things through that were anti-environment, anti-consumer, anti-civil rights, in my view. And we never lost. We never lost. Now, how did we win? We won because we had a handful of Republicans and all the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And we would win by like one vote, two votes. I mean, and a lot of most of that was just stopping things. But we were able to put that coalition together. If you had to have more than a majority, we would have been dead.
And I attribute it not so much to the rule, because as I say, the rule only lasts until it doesn't serve whatever political objective is before the body at the time. I attribute it to a decline in leadership on both the Republican and the Democratic side. The Republican leaders aren't looking for that handful of Democratic votes that would give them greater leverage over their own caucus.
Out of fear?
No, I think out of lack of skill, lack of insight. Mm. The Democratic leader, I mean, it used to be that Alfredo Gutierrez was always looking for opportunities to provide Democratic votes, maybe not his, in exchange for something that was important to him and for the Democrats. And in my judgment, in these budget debates, the Democrats have had a string of opportunities to identify one or two things that they want in the budget in exchange for freeing up a few votes, and instead have just committed
state in Arizona.
In Arizona. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I you know, it would be nice. They kind of rule with an iron fist down there now, I think, on the Republican side, and you know, that's fine for them, but I think you're better off if everybody's at the table and we actually do some sort of compromising and, you know, a more widespread approach. That's how I would view it. That's how government works best.
Doc, did you pick this music? Seriously, I feel like I'm rolling in my grandmother's Cadillac right now.
This is this guy's alma mater.
Look at this. Here we go. Oh, now Grant wants his headphones on. He's like, wait a second. Holy cow, let's get the fight song going on. I think.
Oh, hilarious.
Bob Robb and Grant Woods are with us in the
I don't know if we would have known, though. Is
the music has derailed it. We'll be back in a moment.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we're back with Bob Robb and Grant Woods. The subject matter is the current state of the Republican Party. I want to ask you, we've talked a little bit about where we are. In your mind, how did this happen? What caused this?
Well, I've written several columns confessing that I don't know.
Perfectly.
This is radio. That shouldn't stop you. I guess it didn't stop you in the paper.
Yeah, I was among those who felt that when it came time to actually cast a vote for Donald Trump, that people would be reluctant to do so. Because of the way that he is.
And you had a lot of company in that belief.
Yeah.
And we were all wrong.
Now, the best explanation that I've heard, and we need to remember that he has not gotten a majority of the votes. He's gotten a plurality of the votes. But the best explanation that I've heard is that it is by the Republican electorate a extension of the middle finger towards what they regard as the Washington establishment, which is odd because the Washington establishment today consists of people that those same people voted to hold the offices that they currently hold. But that's the best explanation I've heard.
Kind of enough is enough. Like, we gave them one last lap, and it's not working out, so let's get the crazy train in here.
I don't think it's really just the Republicans. I think it's on both sides of the aisle. I think the Democrats are saying basically the same thing with the Bernie Sanders voters. I think it's two sides of the same coin. The government, the federal government hasn't done much right in a long time, in my view. I think we've had back-to-back presidents who have been underperformers, let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, the world has changed dramatically. And by that, I mean the lives of everyday Americans are much different than they were 20 years ago. And for a whole lot of people, it's not... with the young people, their future is questionable. They don't know really where necessarily how this is going and where they fit in. And for the average everyday worker, the world has changed and in many cases left them behind. So consequently, when you get someone like Trump standing up and being a truth teller, about things, they respond to that. Because politicians today are no different than they've been for a long time. They speak their own language, and it's a ridiculous language. They just jump into this mode where you go, oh, this guy is full of it. You can tell by the way he speaks.
It's programmed.
It's totally programmed, and they're sick of it. And, it, you know, you can deal with that when you're doing well and your family's doing great and job's great and everything's super. When it's not good and it doesn't feel good and it hasn't been good for some time, you're going to respond to the truth teller. And I will tell you, early on, as strange as it seemed to me, I found myself pulling for Donald Trump up on the stage because he was saying some things I liked. I liked him. Finally, someone is saying this, that going into Iraq was a huge mistake and that we got nothing out of it.
And that was Republican Party heresy.
Totally. And the guy, I gave him credit. I mean, there he was in South Carolina with George W. Bush right there. And he said, no, this guy, he's.
And that's
up.
The state where it's most dangerous to.
Totally dangerous. You know. And he said, no, this guy did. He did so many a lousy job in so many areas. I liked all of that. Unfortunately, I was hoping he would do a couple of things, very simple things, that, toward the end of last year. And I think he would have won this easily. Number one, rein it in a little. Okay, it should still be Trump, but rein it in a little bit. Number two, learn the issues. You don't have to be John McCain on defense, where you know every everything for the last 100 years. But could you know like a one pager? He's a smart guy. So the fact that he has chosen not to even learn the issues at all, in my opinion, is pretty much disqualifying.
Well, I think his ego's having too much fun. He's having fun. This was to be a fun ride for him, and it's more fun than he ever expected it to be. And I don't think that really lends itself to calming down and really dialing it back.
I would be happy to vote, honestly, if I lived in New York. I would be happy to vote for him for the United States Senate. It'd be kind of fun to have him in there because he's one of 100.
One hundredth of 50% of one third of the government.
So is Huey Long.
Yeah. That was it's okay.
Not a good episode in American.
Well, one
world.
In 100 I can handle, but not one out of one.
You know, I think it was Bob mentioned that, and it certainly is one of the themes that, all these folks now, and this is Democrats too, but they only seem to be concerned, I think, and they're correct in their analysis, about a primary challenge.
Correct.
Very few elections in November don't have predetermined.
That's the whole problem, Mike. You're exactly right. If you look at the Congress, if there are 435 people in the House, and the same is true in the Senate, there's I don't even know what the number is, 75 races that are actually competitive in the general election. So what that means is if you're a Republican, you are looking over your right shoulder at all times. If you're a Democrat, you're looking over your left shoulder. You just, and trust me, you know this, we know this from experience, most of them only care about being reelected. And I shouldn't say only, but that's like number one through
it's
five.
Very, very easy after you've been in a while to think that your reelection is very important.
It's
to the
very
Republic.
Important. You're indispensable. And most of them have very few marketable skills. That's a problem, too, when you think about what you're going to do. So that means you're going to protect your right flank as a Republican. You're going to protect your left flank as a Democrat. That's all you got to do. That's not great for figuring out how to solve difficult issues.
Well, not hard to see. The example of that is in Arizona. 3 out of 9 seats are potentially competitive, and it looks like 2 of those 3 have ensconced themselves safely, and we're going to have 1 competitive race.
Right.
I think Democrats would challenge that characterization of what Martha McSally's been able to do in Tucson.
Do you disagree?
Currently. She barely won a squeaker.
Yep.
She's done a good job.
Raised a lot of money.
But depending upon how the national political landscape looks, I mean, that is a seat that tends to go the way the national election goes. I don't think she's safe this election or for the foreseeable future, unlike Kyrsten Sinema, who has taken that central Phoenix or central Maricopa County district and has made it pretty much impenetrable for a Republican.
And interestingly, doing so by doing the opposite of what Grant suggested here, basically by ticking off some on her left. mm-hmm. and ensconcing herself in the center. But I think that's a, she's in a unique district.
She's in one of the, if there's 75 competitor districts, then you have to actually do that. You have to deal with all your constituents, mm-hmm. not just a portion of them. That's the way it should be. You know, so I'm all for her taking off people on the left if it's for the reason that she's doing what she thinks needs to be done.
And we saw that. There were some interesting votes in Congress where I looked at the layout of the Arizona delegation, and you had the three competitive districts voting one way and the Shocking. Other six districts voting the other way.
Right. Well,
and Kirkpatrick, interestingly enough, even though she represented a swing district, very rarely has departed from the party, unlike Sinema, who's done right. so routinely. And both Barber and McSally did so with a degree of frequency.
We have just a couple of minutes left. What about the state of Arizona? Do you either of you see us being anything other than a one-party state for the foreseeable future?
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about the stray case where an individual might get elected to something.
It's unusual because, you know, the dominant party is independents now. But, of course, you know, that's
but they,
not
they
really
seem
a
to
party.
Vote. They yeah, seem to distribute their votes almost equally.
Seem to. But that it is odd that we have that dynamic. I think when everybody votes, so in an on-presidential year, big turnout, Arizona will always be in play for both parties and could be in play for an independent. So when we're looking at statewide races, when you're an off-year election, it just the way it's been until independents decide to who are less conservative decide to actually show up and vote, and until the Hispanic community decides to mobilize and vote, then I would think in off-year elections it's going to stay Republican for the foreseeable future. But in presidential years, I think it's up for grabs, and I think it's up for grabs this year between Hillary Clinton and whomever the nominee is.
Particularly if it's Trump. I've seen the figures showing
absolutely.
It's very competitive.
We elect our state officers
in
off-presidential years, except for a stray corporation commissioner or two. And I don't think the Democrats could have fielded a better slate of candidates
right.
than they fielded in 2014. And they all lost by close to double digits.
To me, was the most devastating
yes.
critique of competitive, and
yeah.
particularly Superintendent of Public Construction, where I believe you characterized it as the most qualified candidate ever to run against the least. The least
right.
had an R next to her.
And that one was at least narrow. And so we talk about the troubles of the Republican Party. In Arizona, I think the real story has been the disappearing Democratic Party.
Sure.
Jim Peterson did the best he could with his time and his treasure to try to make it a viable force. You had Janet Napolitano, who sort of overcame the registration disadvantage. But there hasn't been a Democrat win a statewide office since 2008. Until the Democratic even though independents are rising, the difference between Republican registration and Democratic registration is widening.
Yes, and we thought it would be the opposite with Hispanic voters.
Absolutely. And so I think in Arizona, that's the story. The Democratic Party needs to figure out how it can become competitive again.
Right. Mm-hmm. Bob Robb, thank you very much. Former Attorney General Grant Woods, now we'll get to work on at the break. We'll get to work on your gubernatorial campaign. We'll get to, trust me,
yeah,
we're
going
to get to work on it.
Thanks.
Thank you both for joining us. Doc and I'll tie a bow around this one when we get back on the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
He's former Attorney General Grant Wood. So, me trying to bribe him during the commercial break to run for governor.
That's not a bad thing.
I think I have $105.
Former,
in the last
not a good use of your money, maybe.
Oh, my gosh. That guy. I seriously want him to run for governor. An amazing down the center, let's just get stuff done kind of cat.
But it is reflective of exactly the issues that we talked about that he couldn't get nominated.
Yeah.
By the way, if he got nominated, I'm convinced for the same reason he couldn't lose.
Yeah, I would agree.
Because he is the guy in the Senate. Because the parties tend to pull you in different directions,
sure.
left or right. And he is too centrist for the Republicans. And, you know,
we might have Arizona's first independent governor.
Well, and we tend not to vote for independents.
I understand that, but his name recognition, though, come on, come with me. Let me dream a little bit, will you, Doc? Stop trying to crush my dreams.
You know, they had the same situation in California, which was as Democratic a state as Arizona is a Republican state.
Blue, yeah.
And they had a recall election where basically they have an open primary. Mm-hmm. And Arnold Schwarzenegger could not have gotten a Republican nomination, same reason, but he was the centrist candidate and he was odds on favorite.
Yeah.
And won because
going back to name recognition.
A centrist. I think that, you know, and this is true in a lot of states that where one party rules everything, people like to have somebody of the other party sometimes to sort of keep an eye on the treasury. That got Mitt Romney elected in Massachusetts. It got Schwarzenegger elected in California. I mean, people don't like the idea of one party running everything.
Sure.
It tends to produce extremism and, you know, the notions of, you know, sort of robbing us blind with nobody watching the treasury.
Right. So. And as it gets exposed again, we're talking to Bob Robb and former Attorney General Grant Woods. We're talking to them about what could be in the foreseeable future, what could be changed? Could Arizona go purple? Could Arizona go blue? And I like what was said. I like what was said because the staggered election systems that we have in the off-presidential year, it's red, 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 red.
Yep.
It's up for grabs in a presidential when everyone starts paying attention.
And, of course, the Republican legislature will no way on God's earth change that.
No!
If you changed it to presidential years when people – by the way, it wouldn't flip us blue. Wouldn't flip us anywhere near close. We would still be red. But the elections would be closer. They wouldn't be one-sided.
They'd be closer, and they'd have higher voter turnout.
You know, we would have had in this last election, we would definitely have had a different superintendent of public instruction.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. I will go with you on that.
I mean, it's still a red state, but essentially we are naturally about a 5 or 6% Republican swing. That goes to 10% in the off years. And when we elect all our state officials, those are the off years. Those are the non-presidential years because less reliable voters, read mostly Democrats, vote in slightly smaller numbers in the off election years. And it changes everything. And if you notice, by the way, the surge and decline that we see in the national party about how many seats are held by Republicans and Democrats, the Democrats bump up in the presidential years and then they recede in the off years. And we treat that like it's a Democratic wave or a Republican wave, and that's always overstated.
Sure.
Really what it is in the presidential years, the Democrats do a little bit better, and conversely in the off years.
Right. Now, anything they said surprise you? Anything throw
you off? The one thing I thought was not said, and this is in terms of it's, and I wasn't taking this on the premise that the Republican Party is falling apart. They're going to have some real challenges for president, but you know they will control the House, the Senate. They're very competitive for probably about 50-50 right mm-hmm. now, best estimates. But, you know, I think of what has occurred, and this part is not parallel. The Republican Party has been pulled further and further, and I think a lot of it is Fox News. People get their news only there's themes that they hit on. There's war against Christians, war against Christmas, mm-hmm. war on the police, worship of the military. You know, they say we should be, quote, really rebuilding our military is a big theme. By the way, do you know if we cut our military expenditures by 75%, do you know who would have the largest military in the world?
We would, and China would still be behind us with one aircraft carrier that they don't know how to turn on yet.
We got 800 base.
I get it. You're preaching the choir on that. You're preaching the choir. I think defense spending needs to be
but
slashed.
But the point is, and I don't know, and nonsense like Obama's a dictator, whatever, by any objective
measure. Okay, hold on.
But the picture here is group of people get their nose only for the, and they have been worked up into a fervor, and then Donald Trump comes along. And there is fertile ground. This is like a Frankenstein that got created by this, and now it's out of control.
I like how you went with the young Frankenstein. You went the Frankenstein. Not bad there. But I think it's the same side on the other side of the ball. It's the same thing. It's MSNBC and Fox News are identical. If you can watch one episode of Rachel Maddow or just name anything on MSNBC, Good Night, when they had Al Sharpton on there, it's constant anti-Republican anything
but
you can.
Let me explain the difference, okay? In Fox News, you see a theme 24/7.
Yeah.
Yes, does MSNBC have commentators on those shows that are more on the liberal side? Absolutely, but not completely. And their news are Joe Scarborough. Yeah, three hours every morning.
Wolf in sheep's clothing. Let's be real. He's a
Republican.
Phony Republican.
He was a Gingrich conservative.
Sure he was.
Republican.
He was. And then somebody put a big fat check in front of him and said, "You're going to pretend to be a Republican, right? You're coming to our side of the ball." Come on. It's MSNBC and Fox News are polar opposites.
If
they're on both sides.
If he is not a conservative Republican, it only shows you how far that needle has moved.
They fuel the left. Fox fuels the right. That's the way it's been.
But that's like saying, Mike, I'm going to bring the United States Marine and a nuclear arsenal against you. You get a pocket knife. It's fair because we're both armed. It's not parallel.
How does that? I don't care.
Essentially, Fox News is a 24/7 theme of the day closed system that's different from having a few commentators on some shows that personally lean left. It's not a theme of the day.
You and I are going to have to disagree on that. Yeah. I think we'll just – here's what we'll do. We'll do. Doc, this is how I settle everything, okay? You and I are going to grab some drinks, and we're going to watch Fox News for that extended period of time. We're going to grab some drinks. We'll watch MSNBC for the same period of time, and then we'll compare notes. Then we'll compare notes. I'm telling you. I've always said, and then there's poor CNN that just can't get out of their
own
way.
MSNB doesn't have nearly the influence its audience has.
Of course, because it's garbage and no one wants to watch it. How did Air America work out? That's right. Yeah, basically MSNBC radio.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing.
No one wants to listen to it.
The radio is, I think, conservative arguments lend themselves to bumper stickers and people getting worked
as
up.
I would say on the other side as well. Bumper stickers are bumper stickers. How about stay away from bumper stickers and actually read into the issues?
Oh, all for it.
How about that? There you go.
I would outlaw. Outlaw any political statement less than a paragraph long.
Amen. I'm with you.
Because I don't care what it is. If it's a three word slogan, it more conceals information than it does illuminate.
Yet if you're for a tax code that's more than 20 pages long, I don't want to vote for you.
They're hiding. The longer the tax code, the more they're hiding.
Amen, brother.
Okay,
go ahead.
Catch us up. MikeO'Neill.org has access. There's a radio button there. Get all our old shows, commercial-free even. That also click you over the button there to the last three or four shows on KTAR.com.
Yes, got to get to KTAR.com as well to the Think Tank show page. Thanks for spending some time with us right here in the Think Tank.